Because there is a rule, you can't break a record unless there are at least three competitors in the same race of the same gender. Yeah, but they considered the whole race being the race. You know what I mean? So it did not matter that I was the only one in the 48 because there were other people on the course at the same time for the 6 day as well as for the 24-hour race. So basically, that was my first Canadian record 2 months after my first ever ultra. I broke the record by like 3 miles, I think. So I think it was 214 miles originally, and I went 217 miles. I'm not 100% sure of the miles because I do kilometers, right?
Hey, welcome back to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, where we talk about what it takes to go the distance in running and in life. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultramarathon runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation is going to go. So if you're ready, let's get started. My guest this week is Victoria Brown. Victoria is a triathlete and an ultramarathon runner, and her race schedule for this year includes both ultramarathons and triathlons. And in June of this year, 2022, she ran a race called 6 Days in the Dome, and she set a new world record for running 72 hours. She placed first overall, including beating all the men. Victoria's a strong competitor. She's a great storyteller. This was a fun conversation, and I hope you enjoy listening in. How did you get started with the, I know you said have hold the carbs. And so I think you have some keto recipes. So
yes.
do you run? I mean, you train as a keto runner?
Sometimes I do. Yeah. So I carb cycle.
Okay.
So, when I started out running, I was all low carb. So, the two things came together for the carbs and my running, and the whole goal was just weight loss, basically. So I had three kids in 2014. My little one was born and I had a little extra weight on me. And so I started running. And at the same time, I started eating more low carb, high protein rather than straight up keto. But it was working really well for me and I lost a lot of weight and I was very happy with that. And for a few years, it was just basically three times a week. I went out for a 30-minute jog and just, you know, to keep in shape. And then things just escalated on the running part. And it was similar with all the carbs because basically in 2017, I started selling it, the baking mixes that I made originally for myself. Mm-hmm. And so I started selling it and then Amazon picked it up and then a bunch of stores picked it up. So I had to make professional bags. Because first they were just in homemade packaging, right? Mm-hmm. And we sent them out in the mail to people. And now we are in a bunch of health food stores, hundreds and hundreds of them, and Whole Foods Market, and they both got a little bit out of hand, but I'm trying to handle both.
So you said you started running a little bit in 2014. Your start as a runner?
Yes. So she was born in 2014. My first race, I started running in 2015.
In 2015.
So she was born in October. And so I started running 2015. And in May 2015, I did a 10K race.
Okay.
That was my first ever running race that I've ever done.
Wow.
In an hour and 8 minutes, I think that was.
That was when I was running in my 20s. That was about my best time. I think I came close to an hour for a 10K.
Now I'm around 45 minutes for the 10K.
Yeah.
So yeah, that escalated a little bit as well. I'm still not fast for those very short distances, but you know, if it's a local race, I can win my age group. I can even sometimes scoop up a win if no fast guys show up. So yeah, it depends, you know, because you know, even I know a few local girls who are just so.
Yes, and people who run short distances and kind of that's their preference is to run short distances. They can be very, very fast.
Yeah. But yeah, so I don't have that kind of speed, and I don't think I ever will. But I'm doing what you know, my genetics allow.
That's right. So you didn't? Were you athletic in high school or you know in school?
No. And I specifically like. If I could, I would always get out of phys ed. I didn't like moving. I'm kind of a little bit of a nerd. So I just liked to sit and read and be by myself. Uh-huh. So even during recess, I wouldn't even, if I could swing it, then I would just stay inside and hide somewhere and not want to go outside to run around with the other kids. I was not just not athletic, but like the exact opposite.
Okay.
Who wouldn't want to move for the life of me? The only thing I really liked is, around age 9, 10, I started horseback riding.
Okay.
So I really enjoyed that, but it's a really expensive sport and I didn't grow up wealthy. So, it was very limited how much I could do.
Mm-hmm.
So it was basically once a week. And then later, when I got into, I became a sports reporter because of the love of horses. I just thought if I can't be a competitor, I would be able to commentate those events. And I did. So I got into the Hungarian television sports department at age 17, and I started working there. First, just making coffee and kind of thing. And I ended up commentating the Olympics in 96, the equestrian events for the Hungarian television. So that was a big love of me.
Wow.
But I was never really competitive in the sport itself. But at that point, because I was the commentator on TV, they let me, there was a little club that was in Budapest, my hometown, the national team for the modern pentathlon train there, and they would let me ride horses there for free. So that was
well, that's a good benefit.
Yeah, so I still have this love of horseback riding, but since my kids were born, I haven't done much of it. I've been on a horse a few times in the last 12 years, but also it's not something you forget. So you know, when I'm retired and I don't run as much or whatever, I don't know, I might pick it up again. I really love it. It's just much more complicated to get out there, you know. It involves another animal, a lot of logistics, a lot of things to do. So for the moment, it's just much easier to put on my running shoes and go running.
Yeah. So did you said you had a goal of being commentator. Was that when you started working, making coffee? Was it your plan to become a commentator?
Yeah. Okay. So, I have quite a, I don't know, hustler personality. So,
yeah.
I just first, it was just, there was just one television channel back in the day. So, it was the state channel. It wasn't that easy to get in there. And, yeah, that was my goal for showing up there. That first, it was my mom knew somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody, you know, like after five loops. And then so I was able to call up somebody who would show me the building. So that was the original excuse. So on a Sunday, I went in, I met this super nice lady and she showed me around. Okay, this is the television, this is how we do things here. And then I asked, you know, can I come back next Sunday?
Mm-hmm.
She said, all right. And then next Sunday, and then next Sunday. And then one day I asked, what if I came in during the week as well? a lot of things for free at first. And then in 92, during the Barcelona Games, I was already handing out tapes to the editors who would record the events. So I had responsibility. I think it was still not paid, but I was the one who knew which tape is empty, which tape can be re-recorded, and which tape will have what, and that kind of administration. Mm-hmm. And because everybody was gone to the 92 games, there were not really any reporters who stayed behind. So that was actually when I did my first two pieces for the TV as well, because there were two equestrian races, a dressage and the show jumping race or competition. And yeah, there was nobody there who could do them. So they let me do it at age 17.
that is a lot of hustle and a lot of, I mean, that's a good strategy. And just of, you know, showing up and continue showing up and yeah. People, you know, you get, there's a level of familiarity and people get comfortable with you. And
yeah, it's a theme in my life. Just go there, show up, and eventually something will happen.
Well, and I've noticed that in groups. I mean, there are a lot of times when you're new in a group and there's already, you know, the group has an identity and there's friendships there. And if you're the new person in the group, it's, you know, a lot of times you might feel kind of excluded because they all have common history. And I've found if you keep showing up, even if people don't talk to you very much at first, if you keep showing up, you eventually it's like, oh, well, you just kind of slide in and yeah. become part of the group. And it's sometimes it's hard to get past that. You have to kind of be secure in who you are. But I've found that most of the time that works. There are some groups that never let you in, but
exactly. But most of them do. Like ultra runners are friendly.
Yes, ultra runners are friendly. I've been in the road cycling community, and they're much more exclusive. And road cyclist, if you can't keep up with the group, they'll just ride off and leave you. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, but usually they will have a C group where they will sweep. So
yeah. Kind of depends on who shows up.
So, yeah, right.
But yeah, ultra runners I know are very, very, they're very accepting to everybody. It has been and seems to be worldwide. That community is just very accepting. And so I was just really.
Yeah, because it's just as hard, you know, somebody who is just fighting the cutoff, he is spending more time out there than the ones in the front pack. So I would say it's even harder for those people. So they deserve at least as much respect.
Yes. Yeah. And that's, that is true. The longer effort sometimes, takes a lot more strategy, just as much strategy, a different kind of strategy, to keep going as the people who are in the lead. So. So you said you started running just not too long ago, and you kind of shot ahead. After your first 10K, where did you go from there, and how did you end up like with a world record? I mean maybe that's too much to cover in one question.
I'll give it a shot. The thing started slowly, and when I started running, basically in the back of my mind somewhere, the goal was an Ironman triathlon.
Okay.
Because my friends were doing that, who also started from zero, and it was kind of, if they can do it, I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't say it out loud at that point, but that was kind of what I started working towards in 2015. So 6 months later, I ran a half marathon, and exactly a year later at the same race where I ran the 10K, I ran a marathon. And then I started doing short triathlon. So I did one sprint, one Olympic, just to know what it is like.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did a few 70.3s. And then 2017 September, so after working on it for 2.5 years, I got to the point of being able to finish an Ironman.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing was that as soon as I finished that, it was obvious from the results and from how little training I did that these longer distances are much more suitable for me, for my strength. So compared to the other people, I was front of the mid-pack kind of in my age group versus in the other shorter distances being at the end of the mid-pack. So I really liked that distance. And then so I kept at it from 2018. I started working with a coach, but then my husband asked me that I don't really do that much training. So we kept the distance shorter. The kids were really little still, right? So I had in 2018, I had a 3-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a 7-year-old. So there was a lot on me in terms of taking care of them. And so the coach I started working with right away said that from about 8-9 hours a week, he can make me do better at the 70.3 distance. So that's what happened. So that's, I think it's 1,800 meters swim, 90 kilometers on the bike. So that's 56 miles. So 1.2 mile swim, 56 miles on the bike, and a half marathon at the end. So yeah, after working with him for 6 months, I came seventh in my age group, suddenly at a 70.3 here in Canada.
Wow.
So that was a huge step up from nowhere. And then in 2019, I changed coaches. And actually, when the pandemic hit, that's when I ran my first ultramarathon. But basically, 2020 was the breakthrough year in both in triathlon and ultra running. So suddenly, I don't even know how this all happened, but out of the blue, from a mid-packer, I became a contender for podiums and win races and win them outright and all that. And I seriously did not really change anything. So it might just be that, you know, those 4, 5, 6 years of training and not really taking, you know, time off and huge breaks. It's just the consistency that resulted in better results. So the first one was 2020 summer. My original goal race was canceled in triathlon. So I did the Hungarian National Long Course Championship and I won it. I won the female championship overall.
What was the race? What was the name of the race?
It's called Extreme Man.
Okay.
It can't be branded Ironman because it's not under the Ironman.
Oh, okay.
Umbrella.
Okay, but it's still a triathlon then.
It's a triathlon. Okay. It's the exact same distance as a full Ironman. But it's not branded as Ironman, and it's the national championship for the long course triathlon for Hungary.
Okay. Okay.
So it was at that point, it was quite a big deal because it's professionals and amateurs in the same race. And I was expecting to win my age group, but I didn't even think that I could podium the overall. So the original goal was, even if I'm top 5 overall, I'm super happy. And then I won it. And with a performance that was very unexpected I didn't expect that. My coach didn't expect that. In Hungary, nobody knew who I was. So it was a complete surprise to everybody. And then just 1 month later, I ran my first ultra again because everything else was canceled. All the other races were canceled. So I had this little race on my bucket list forever. It was a 24-hour timed race. And the original idea was that I saw this race once when I ran a half marathon there, that it's a loop. So you can just put your stuff there and hit it every 1.5 miles. So basically, you can be crewed without anybody being there. You can crew yourself with having your own stuff there. And that's what people did. And that kind of sounded really exciting to me, and to see, you know, how much can you run in 24 hours if you just start running and keep running?
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out 132 miles. that was what I did, 213 kilometers. And that's having never run more than a marathon before.
Okay, so you went from a marathon distance to a 24-hour race and ran 132 miles.
Yes. And so I won the race outright. I broke the course record there. And I became first selection for the Canadian national 24-hour team.
Okay.
And I broke the Canadian soil record.
So this race was in Canada?
Yeah, this was just a local race. Okay. And the reason they let it run during the pandemic, because there were very few people who ran a 24-hour race, right? It was like 100 people maybe. And they were not on the course at the same time. In a 24-hour race, a lot of people just take a break. Mm-hmm. And it's a 1.5 mile loop. So even when people were on the course, they were spread out. So it was safe for the pandemic situation. Mm-hmm. But the interesting part was that this course before hosted the national championship a few times. And I still broke the course record, which means that those national champions won with less of a distance than what I did just from, and I wasn't even training for an ultra. I was training for this triathlon a month before. And then this just came as, you know, it's here, let's run it.
So it was a 1.5 mile loop. Was it a trail race or was it on?
No, it was, it wasn't flat. So the course was not easy. It was paved in a park.
Okay.
But it's called That Damn Hill. And that tells you something, right?
Tells you something, yeah.
It's not a flat course, that's for sure. So it has a damn hill that you run up every single loop. So with my 95 loops, I ran up that damn hill 95 times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was swearing by the end.
it sounds like it.
But basically because people kept asking while I was running, you know, what's the goal? And I had no goal. I just wanted to run for 24 hours. That was it. Like, just run. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. So I ran up the damn hill every single time, 95 times. I did not walk.
Wow. Now, well, you said something back about when you started, you said that you set a goal to do an Ironman, but you didn't say it out loud. Did you tell anybody your goal? I mean, No, I just,
because I didn't know if it was a realistic goal.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kept it to myself. I didn't even tell my husband or anybody. I just started working towards it. I realized that the key of an Ironman is the marathon at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So first I wanted to see if I could do a marathon. So my first marathon a year after I started with that 10K was 4:59. With a 5-hour goal time, I came in 4:59.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next marathon, I had a 4:30 goal time and I came in 4:17. And then the third marathon, which was the last one before I did the Ironman, I did have a 4-hour goal time and I came in 3:54, I believe.
Okay.
So, yeah, and at this point, I can run about, like, if I marathon train, my best is right now 3:26, but that was in a 6-hour race. So mm-hmm. I can probably do 3:20-ish if I focus on just the marathon, but at this point, I'm not really focused on
that. Yeah. Well, marathon strategy is a lot different than ultra. Also, if you're looking at doing a marathon as part of a triathlon, I mean, your strategy and times have to be different as well because you've...
Yeah, but the training, so you're, yeah, for the Ironman training, it's almost a marathon training, the running part. So I'm actually, right now I'm training for Kona, the Ironman World Championship in October. So we are just starting basically to build towards that faster marathon, having come off of the 6-day where we did not build any kind of speed. Yeah. You don't really need that for 6 day.
For a 6 day race, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. When did you speak your goal out loud? I mean, was it after you'd done a couple of marathons that you
after,
said?
I think it was after the 70.3s. So there was 1 year, 2016, I did a 70.3 in Hungary. And then after that, I said it out loud that I'm going to go for the Ironman. And I think at that point, I even signed up for it. And so in 2017, I did 2 70.3s and the Ironman.
Yeah. So I'm curious, did keeping that goal to yourself just kind of as a personal thing, was that helpful for you? Did you notice a difference?
Yes, I think so, because I wasn't really committed. I just went out to see what's going to happen. And I like that. There's no pressure if you don't tell anybody, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting strategy. At this point, I usually put it out there what my goal is. And I know I don't necessarily feel the pressure because I will say A, B, and C goals.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, if I'm only hitting the C, that's fine. It was still there. Then there is a little bit of pressure to actually hit what I say I might hit.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm very far off, like with the 6 day world record, I was way off of the world record. But at the same time, the B goal was, either the age group world record or the Canadian record. And I did hit the Canadian record. So I did hit the B goal, but it's far off of the A goal. There was a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
There. So it's easier if you don't say it.
Mm-hmm.
But now, I don't know. because it's very clear in my head what I want to hit and what I'm aiming for. It just feels like it's the right thing to tell people.
Well, and it's interesting because I did something similar. That's why I asked, because when I started running, and you know, my goal was to run a 50-mile trail race,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't, like you, I didn't even tell my wife. I just said, yeah. I'm gonna go start running and get in shape. You know, I'm just gonna start running trails. And I didn't tell anybody that I was gonna run that 50-mile race until a month before, and then I signed up. So, but I think, and
it's
so you
that
made,
way,
you,
isn't it?
Yeah, I think what the comparison, you know, you're saying now you see your goals, but if it's something that you've never done before, you know, keeping it to yourself is maybe a good thing. And because in my experience it was too, and that's why I ask.
Yeah, but it also helps with the expectations when I'm not aiming for something big.
Mm-hmm.
Like there will be a 6 day race next March, the World Championship in Italy, which I'm gonna participate in. But knowing the course, it's not going to be a huge number, even if I correct the things that I got wrong last time.
Mm-hmm.
So having that out there, that don't expect me to do big here. This will be some sort of an experiment. I want to try a bunch of new things, but the course is not really compatible with putting up a world-class performance. I still want to win the world championship, obviously, but you know, it's probably not going to be as high a number as I could on a course that is more suited for faster running. That is also helpful, that I can tell people that, you know, this time don't expect the big thing. I will run another one next year where I don't know which one yet, but where I will aim for a big number, but it's not going to be the World Championship in March.
Okay. So the World Championship, is it, you say the course is different. I know, cause you did your world record was on a track.
It was on a track. And, I also want to see, that's one of the experiments with the Italian course that I did a 72-hour race in Las Vegas in this February, where I first broke the 72-hour world record. And there, I found it really hard to manage the day-night cycle. Mm-hmm. So that's why I decided to do the sixth day on an indoor track where the lighting is constant.
Okay.
So there is no day-night cycle.
Mm-hmm.
It's just always daylight. And I found that extremely helpful, and I did relatively well with that part there. The strange thing was that my body, despite all that, my body was still respecting the circadian rhythm, which mm-hmm. I didn't expect would happen. So basically, the naps that I took at nighttime were better quality than the naps I took at noon.
Interesting.
So we are going to change that, and we'll remove the noon nap and make the night naps 2 hours instead of one, and see if then I do better with the day-night cycle.
Okay.
So I'm only going to sleep at night. It will be longer. So instead of 45 minutes, it will be 2 hours. And we'll see if that means that I can do well on a course that is outdoors, because mm-hmm. that will influence my decision where I'm going to have my next attempt. Am I going to go back to the dome, to the indoor track, which causes other problems, or am I going to choose a course that's outdoors where I have to face the day-night cycle?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you, after your first 24-hour race, how did you, what was the road to get to doing these 72 hours?
Oh my God. So that escalated very quickly from there. So basically on that first 24-hour race, it turned out that I'm a natural at this ultra running thing.
Yes, obviously. you did well going from marathon to that. Yeah.
Right? So for triathlon, I worked really, really hard. And even though I am a national champion, and last year I qualified for Kona by winning my age group at Ironman Waco in the States. And I beat the second person in my age group by an hour.
Oh, wow.
And the third person by 2 hours. And overall in that race, I was fourth. So that was a very good result. But despite all that, I'm not a world-class triathlete, you know. I'm an age grouper, so an amateur. And in my age group, I can do well. But even then, like in Kona, I don't even expect to be in the first 10 or anything like that. I'm happy if I'm somewhere, 20 something. And the pros in triathlon are a completely different category. While in ultra running, for one thing, because there is not that much money in the sport to begin with, there are not many pros to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So, in these timed races, there are very few of them, especially because people who have like a sponsorship where they can only train, they are more in the trail running world.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really like that. I did a race last weekend and I just confirmed that, no.
trail running is a different focus to train. I mean, there's a lot more things to consider besides.
Yeah. No, I just like to run. So, I did this race because I wanted to qualify for Badwater next year. And the races that I normally do don't count mm-hmm. Towards the qualification criteria. So I did it. And basically, I just confirmed that, no, I just don't enjoy this kind of running because there was not much running there.
There's a lot of walking and trail racing.
Yeah, so there is a lot of hiking uphill, and I just don't like that. I prefer to run. I like flat mm-hmm. and to actually run. In ultra running, it was obvious that I have a natural talent for this. And immediately after that 24-hour race, I was contacted by the Canadian team to run the Big Dogs Backyard Ultra Championship for Canada, which was virtual, but the so every country was virtually connected, but the countries came together in one place to run. So it was kind of virtual, but not virtual.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
I had to fly to BC, British Columbia, to run this race with the team. There were 15 of us. And that was the first time I met real ultra runners, basically. And that was a month after this 24-hour race. And I did relatively well. I did 34 laps. And then because it was raining for the whole time, basically that was the first time I've ever had blisters in my life. And I had no idea what to do with them. So that took me out at after 34 hours. Out of the blue, you know, having only run a 24-hour race longer than a marathon, the 34 hours was not bad.
If you are a business owner or an entrepreneur, you know all about stress. Business owners and ultramarathon runners both have to have a strong mindset, but the difference is that business owners and entrepreneurs tend to ignore the warning signs of stress and burnout. When you run an ultramarathon, you push your body to the limit, and you have to manage your energy in an ultramarathon to be successful and make it to the finish line. But when you run an ultramarathon, you get to rest and recover when your race is over. If you're a business owner, you tend to feel like you're in a race with no finish line. In ultramarathon, they call those the last man standing, and you, the strongest, survive. If you're a business owner and you're not careful, you could be one of those who ends up blowing up and not finishing, breaking your body. Business owners tend to keep pushing until something breaks. As a mindset coach, I help business owners manage their energy, de-stress their life, and be profitable as well as healthy and successful. If you are in that situation, contact me at ultramindsetpodcast.run. That's ultramindsetpodcast.run for a free 25-minute mindset reset. I can help you keep from burning yourself out, managing your energy for success.
The Big Dogs alternates between trail and road. If it's held there at the location, was it that way as well in BC? The virtual
was it? It was a relatively flat gravel road.
Okay.
So it did have a few ups and downs. It went up a bridge and then down. Compared to the real course, it was relatively flat. It was up to each country what they chose for their course. Okay. It didn't have to match the original course. So if the countries that wanted to do really well basically chose an easier course. And then some countries just had no option. So like the Tarahumara, they just ran at insane elevation course.
Yes.
it was crazy, and they were the ones who had the top three left when any other country only had two left. So that was very impressive. But we were the team that had 24 left the longest. I mean, 15, all 15 left the longest.
Uh-huh.
That was for 24 hours. So at 24 hours, we had all 15 of us left. And after 24, the first person dropped out. But we came third at that championship, and that was, again, very successful. And there I met this guy, Matt Shepard, who said he was going to run a race a month later. And I looked at that race. He was running a 6-day. But there was a 48-hour and a 24-hour race as well at the same race. And it was in BC also, in this BC winter, which means basically that it's raining all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And when I faced the situation that I did at the Big Dogs, I decided I need to learn how to treat blisters, because this is not okay, that I don't even know if you, you know, if you pop them or if you just leave them, or what do you do with them?
Yeah.
So I got a book, John Wonhoff's book, Fixing Your Feet. I read it all. I ordered a whole bunch of things and I decided, okay, I'm going to run another race in the rain. So it was obvious that this race is going to be raining for the whole time again. But I wanted to figure this thing out with the blisters. So I decided to run this race in November. And I looked at all the different Canadian records at that point and decided that the 48 hour might be within my reach. So the plan was basically to go there. I was the only competitor in the 48 hour.
You were the only person there?
I was the only person in the 48 hour. But there were a bunch of people in the 24 hour and there were a bunch of people in the 6 day. And basically what the Canadian Association said, because there is a rule, you can't break a record unless there are at least three competitors in the same race of the same gender.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But they considered the whole race being the race.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. it did not matter that I was the only one in the 48 because there were other people on the course at the same time for the 6 day as well as for the 24 hour race. So basically that was my first Canadian record 2 months after my first ever ultra. I broke the record by like 3 miles, I think. So I think it was 214 miles originally and I went 270 miles. I'm not 100% sure of the miles because I do kilometers, right?
Yeah, right.
So I know the numbers in kilometers exactly. I know it was 318 kilometers and I went to 326 kilometers or 325. But I think that's where it's about, because 320, no, you know what? It was less than 320. So that's 200 miles.
Okay.
So I went from 198 miles to 202 miles.
Okay. Yeah.
With that record. But it's up to, so I broke that twice since, and it's up to 353 kilometers right now.
Wow.
Which is, I think it's 220. Yeah. That's 220 miles.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm up from the 202 because it was raining for the whole time. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I could only do 202. So there were stories like the whole, we had a canopy that the organizers loaned us, luckily. But at one point, the roof collapsed from the weight of the rain. It was raining for the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And soaked all my clothes and everything.
Oh, wow.
I was sitting in there trying to treat blisters when this whole thing collapsed on us, soaking everything, all my dry clothes, everything. And then it happened once more. Because I left my suitcase on the ground. And so it was a soft-sided suitcase. So, again, the dry clothes got completely soaked. So my crew was running to the laundromat to get them dry. Yeah. It was quite a challenge. But, you know, I got it done. I broke the record by like 3 miles. That's fine. I still broke it.
So you entered the race looking at the record, thinking this is within my reach to break this.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And it was, it turned out, but that's what I tend to do. Interestingly. So, with both the, or all three of them, basically the 48, the 72. So I now hold the 48, the 72 and the 6 day Canadian records. Last year I held 100 mile for a while, but then Amanda broke it this year, so I don't have the 100 miles. I was thinking it would be really cool to have from the 100 miles to the 6 day, right? That's what I was working. No, actually, I was working towards having all the Canadian records from 12 hours to the 6 day.
Okay.
So I was only missing the 12 hour and the 24 hour.
Mm-hmm.
But then Amanda broke the 100 mile. So if I want to do the 12-hour to 6-day, I will have to take it back, which I'm not sure I will better ever. But I might just go for, you know, from 24-hour to 6-day, and then we'll see. But the 12-hour is a relatively low-hanging fruit. I think the 12-hour, even though my strength is not speed, I think the 12-hour mark is not as high as the 24-hour mark, relatively speaking.
Interesting.
So I've done 130 kilometers.
In the 12-hour?
In the 12-hour, okay, so as part of my 100-mile.
Mm-hmm.
And the record for the 12-hour is 133. So it's only a mile and a half, less than 2 miles more.
Mm-hmm.
Mind you, Amanda broke it to 134. So, like, in her 100 mile. So, yeah, but it's still, even at 134 kilometers, which is, what is it? It's like
134
kilometers. It's like 70 something.
That would be like 70, yeah.
Mm-hmm. 70 yeah. something miles. So, it's still softer than the 24-hour record, which is 238 kilometers. So relatively speaking, it's a softer record. So it might be easier to break than the 24-hour. The 24-hour is quite a high mark for my abilities, at least, because I'm not fast, right? So we'll see.
Yeah, and the longer distances you train for, the less. I mean, you have to go, you know, you have to pace yourself
exactly.
to go longer. And so, yeah, it's hard. I would imagine, yeah it'd be like an ultra runner trying to enter a marathon and compete.
Yeah.
It's just it's a different mindset.
Similar.
Yeah.
It's similar. But I was going to say that I did the same thing with each of them, not the 100-mile record, because I broke that by quite a bit. And that was very surprising to me. But the 48, the 72, and the 60, because the record was the goal, I broke them by like 2 miles each mm-hmm. for the first time. Later, I broke the 48 another 2 times. I now broke the 72 for the second time as well. But I just broke the Canadian 60, and again, I added a mile to the record.
I thought it was interesting because when you wrote about that, you said that you still had time left when you'd broken the record, and you found it much that your mind had almost said, "I'm done," or yeah. "I'm finished. I've reached my goal." And the last, you were so much slower for the last. So what? How does your mind work? I mean, with as you're running, what's your mental kind of strategy for getting to where you went?
I'm a big believer in that all of this is decided in the brain. It's far less about physical abilities and muscles and. Even the things that seem to be very physical, I'm a big believer that that's also your brain screwing with you, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because what happened in this one for 6 days, so I broke the record and I had 80 minutes left, an hour and 20 minutes left when I broke the record. And at that point, I wasn't in good shape. So everything was hurting. Obviously, I had been running for 6 days. There were a whole bunch of injuries. I was horribly chafed. My feet were full of blisters and so on and so on. So I decided that I should add some distance to it. I have 80 minutes left, so I don't know how much I can end, but I will try. And the interesting thing was that I discovered previously that if I actually ran at an okay pace, so we are talking like 10 minute miles, 10:15-ish, so mm-hmm. 6 minutes per kilometer, which is at the end of a 6 day, it feels fast.
Mm-hmm.
Like I had been running for 6 days, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
If you're going out jogging now, yes, it feels like a snail's pace, but if you're running for 6 days and at the end you're trying to bring in this pace, it feels fast. So I was running at this pace because at the end for the last 4 hours, because I found that certain injuries that I had at that point and that were extremely painful when I was walking, like I couldn't walk for the last day. When I was jogging or shuffling around, They were still very, very painful. And by the end, they were also so painful that I couldn't really do this shuffling. But when I was running, I didn't feel any pain.
That's interesting.
Yes. And my theory is that because it takes effort at that point to run at this pace, your brain is just concentrating on that movement and producing that energy. And for that reason, the pain just can't get through. Like, you know, the transmitters and, you know, just the signals don't make it.
Uh-huh.
Because your brain is busy with something else. So that's what happened for the last 4 hours for me. So so I was either running at this pace or lying down on the floor with my back flat because it was my back that was hurting. But after I broke the record and I wanted to add some distance and I kept running at this faster pace, after it wasn't even 20 minutes when the pain got through.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, so that's what I'm saying, that I think your mind just decides that, you know, we got the goal. This is just extra. Why the heck are we bothering with this when we could just be lying down?
Yes.
Let's send the damn signal that, you know, it hurts and then it will stop. So that's why I'm thinking, like, isn't it super interesting that, you know, it doesn't hurt until you break the record. And then you break the record, you still tell yourself, yes, I want to add to it. But in the back of your mind, it's just thinking, no, this is BS. Let's just finish this. And, and interestingly enough, then the pain signals get through. And then I just stop because, like, as soon as the pain started to get through at this pace as well, I think it wasn't a strong enough pain at that point, at this running pace, that I couldn't have kept going.
Mm-hmm.
But the pain is there. All right, who cares if I break it by 1 mile or five? Let's just stop there. And with any luck, I will keep breaking this one as well. So that's why I'm saying that, you know, I added a mile to this record, but hopefully now that I know better, because this was my first attempt. And that's why, you know, it was the same with the 48, the 72, that at first try, I can break that record if that's the goal, but just by a tiny bit, since that's what I'm going for. But hopefully next time, now that I've done it once, I can do better and improve it a little bit. And, you know, the 48 is up from the original 318 miles, kilometers, which mm-hmm. is 198. It's up to 353. So that's quite a big difference.
That is.
Like, yeah, that's like, what, 40? Yeah, for almost 40K. So almost like a bit less than a marathon.
Yeah. So. Yeah, that is interesting. And that, you know, a lot of runners, you know, back of the pack runners, middle of the pack runners have the same kind of mental issue and mental struggles. I mean, in the 100-mile races, you know, you get to mile 60 or so, and your body is telling you the same kind of thing that you had, you know, well, I've made my B goal, you know, you say I've made, or, you know, or just a lot of times it's just your mind that gives up and your body is able to keep going.
Now I know exactly that I can run like that at the end of a 6 day. I can run like that at the end of 100 miles. It's just a question of, do I decide to?
Mm-hmm. Well, and you had plenty of issues and problems to overcome as well, getting up to that point. I mean, you'd done a lot of problem solving and working around to fix pain. And
yes. Oh my God. Yeah. There were a lot of injuries and, you know, chafing and feet, and there were a lot of things that now that I know, you know, we just need to tape those areas beforehand. Mm-hmm. And then it might not come up during the whole race. And that's why I'm thinking also getting away from the track. I want to try it because in Las Vegas, I had no issues with my ankles and shins. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if it's the track specifically that causes that problem. Yeah. So we'll see it in Italy, because if in Italy I have no issues, then it might be a better choice to go on a course that is not a track.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the flat running is, I mean, that has its own issues versus, you know,
but I've come a long way since last year, because last year after 3 days I had to drop out because of that ankle. Mm-hmm. And I learned a lot about my ankle. I learned a lot about injuries and handling injuries in these extremely long ultras. Mm-hmm. So I still find it hard to decide, because at this point I'm kind of the mindset that it's going to go away when I stop. So at this point, I'm just handling injuries during these long ultras with the mindset of let's fix it, let's get to the end of the race, and then I can take care of it. And so far, it's been working. So far, I haven't destroyed anything that would be lasting. Mm-hmm. But these are clearly like not just, you know, muscle soreness or normal things. These are injuries that came up. And but again, at the end of the race, once you stop, that, like I was running yesterday, nothing was hurting. So and I ran a 100-mile race last weekend. So my shin was hurting there, but that's a different story. I got through it.
That's great. So thank you a lot for taking time to talk to me. I'll try to keep this to about an hour. So I know we could probably go on, but I want to be respectful of your time too. So,
but I can tell for a long time.
Yeah. Tell people how to find you and you've got a business as well called Hold the Carbs.
Yeah. So if they want some very healthy, very clean, low carb products, then check out holdthecarbs.ca. Mm-hmm. And that's my company, and I have my soul and love in it. So it's a small Canadian company, and we are trying to get bigger. They can order online, they can order on our website, but they can find online in other stores and in Canada, in BC and Ontario, they can find it in the stores as well, for the most part. They can find me on Facebook and Instagram. Usually if you search for Victoria Brown Athlete, it will come up. Mm-hmm. That's my handle on Insta. And on Facebook, if you search for that, you can find me there. Those are my two main platforms. I don't really do TikTok. And I'm not young enough for that, I think. I'll leave that to my daughter, who is 12. She does TikTok. I will stay. Even Insta was a big step up for me. I'm the Facebook generation, right? Yes. So I only started that after people were actually curious about how I'm doing it and what I'm doing and what's going on. So I realized, okay, well, these people are on Insta. Oh, and I just registered on Twitter. But the thing is, like, okay, so that's I don't really put anything on Twitter. I'm just there to watch, because all the scientists put their stuff on Twitter, I think, because they're for some reason, I don't know why, like, that's the preferred platform of the scientists in the exercise physiology. And when I, you know, all the scientists I was listening to on the podcast, they were saying, you know, I'm on Twitter as this, I'm on Twitter as that. And I'm like, and I'm not on Twitter. I've never been. Okay, so I registered there, but I think I have two posts on Twitter. But I'm there to look at the scientists and just follow them. So I don't really use it to post. But I post my stuff on Instagram and Facebook.
Okay, yeah. That's good. And we'll put the links on the show notes as well.
So. Thank you.
Before you go, I have a tradition I call the bridge questions.
Okay.
Who approacheth the bridge of death must answer me these questions three. The other side he see.
Ask me the questions, Bridgekeeper. I'm not afraid.
First one is, what is your go-to fuel for doing your ultramarathons?
So I'm an F2C athlete. It's a nutrition company in Canada. It's called F2C Nutrition. And I drink their glycoendurance mix during the races. And the great thing about their glycoendurance mix in these super long ultras is that they have four different flavors. So I can mix them up.
Uh-huh.
My absolute favorite is the mango, but the lemon lime is a close second. And then they have strawberry. I quite like that too. And then they have the green apple. So that's what I usually drink in these long ultras.
Okay. So do they sell to the United States as well?
Yes, they absolutely do. And they have ambassadors in the States as well.
Okay. Okay.
So they have a full team and they sponsor, I think, triathlon races as well. So sometimes their drink will be the one on the course.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, and they are, it's all natural and very good on your tummy. My tummy is not great with these. So that's why I don't usually eat the first 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I just drink these drinks because my tummy doesn't really do well with the solid food in the first phase of these races. So, theirs is very friendly to the tummy. So that's why that's my go-to.
Well, that's good. Okay, second question. What in your training, as you've been out running and training, what is the strangest thing that you've ever seen when you're out doing your training runs?
My training is not that exciting. So yeah, no, not really. Strangest thing in a race that I've seen is a glowing unicorn, but it was not real.
Okay, yes.
And there was a glowing broccoli as well, huge, like a size of a house.
Broccoli?
Broccoli, for some reason, it was broccoli. That was the first race, this 48 hour in the rain, where I had hallucinations. Mm-hmm. And one of them was a huge glowing unicorn. It was gorgeous. And another one was this huge glowing broccoli.
Yeah.
The real things, I don't really see that many exciting stuff.
We've had another runner said the strangest thing she saw was a woman. She's a trail runner. And it was a trail race, and it was a hallucination, and it was a woman sitting in a lawn chair beside the trail in the middle of the woods. So hallucinations count for strangest things.
Yeah, okay, good. I'm glad.
When you wrote that, you said you're not one that tries to avoid hallucinations.
No, I actually quite like them because there are two things why I think I like them. One, mine are never scary. So, you know, some people will see like, you know, big spiders and scary stuff. No, the scariest thing I've ever seen were ghosts, but they were cute little ghosts like hanging on a tree, two of them. That was in a backyard race. So the two of them, like Halloween decorations, were hanging on a tree and they were just this big. So they were cute. I don't see scary stuff. So that's one thing. The other thing is that mine never move.
Okay.
So they will never come after me or chase me or do anything bad to me. So I think that's why I really don't mind them. But now I know how to protect myself if I do want them to disappear. So that's vitamin C, which I tried in this race, in this sixth day, that if I take vitamin C, they go away. But I like them, so I don't usually. I specifically took it this time because I wanted to try that. If I do take the vitamin C, do they go away? Because I've never tried it. I was just given this tip by Trishul, who is a famous Canadian ultra runner. So, yeah, but I there are two things. One, I feel like a lot of people pay a lot of money to get hallucinations.
Right? Yes, they do.
So I'm getting it with no drugs. How cool is that? They are usually beautiful or cute or, you know, even the bears at this last race that I saw on the track, they were just very cute little black bears. They were not scary. They didn't move. They were just sitting there keeping me company in the middle of the night. So I really don't mind. And then the other thing is that I'm not a religious person, so I feel like this is my spiritual experience.
It's interesting. I there's a lady that I talked to on the podcast who's doing doing studies on the similarities between ultramarathon runners and the mystics in religious orders, and some of the practices are the same, and some of the experiences are the same. So
this is my spiritual journey to see these creatures and people and all that, and they're always very friendly and nice and beautiful and cute and all that. So I really don't mind that.
Good. Third question is, what word or phrase kind of sums up your philosophy of life?
That's kind of tough. I don't know. I have a lot of them. I have different ones for athletics and different ones for... I don't know, balance. I like balance in my life, which is very hard when you're an ultra runner.
Mm-hmm. And with kids.
Yeah. But that's exactly why, because of the kids, I can't just be fully consumed by running and triathlon and all that, because there are the kids, right? So I try to find that balance in life that will just give me the best of both worlds. And I always... like to be in the present, so I want to be. I always choose present over something that might come in the future. Or so if you can do it now, go for it. Don't wait. Basically,
that's a great philosophy. Thank you a lot, Victoria. I appreciate the time you've taken.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Ultra Marathon Mindset Podcast. I do enjoy being able to spend time with you here each week. I appreciate you taking the time to listen. The show notes for this episode and others are at ultramindsetpodcast.run. You can find this week's guest there. More information, links to their social media and website. There's also a podcast player there if you want to share this episode with somebody who does not normally listen to podcasts and doesn't have a podcast player on their phone. You can also find links there for my Amazon affiliate link, Crush Your Goals course, a short course I made to help you get your goals in order. Also, you can schedule a chat with me. I have my online calendar is there. All of these links are at the sidebar if you're on a laptop, or you have to scroll clear to the bottom if you are on a phone. If you did enjoy this episode and you do not know somebody who might like it, take it just a minute, send them a link so they can listen. Remember that an ultramarathon mindset is about more than just running. You need a strong mindset for success no matter what your goal in life. And developing a strong mindset is a skill you can improve. Thank you again for listening. I'll see you next time.